eyes flickered to the bed, and her lips twitched. I know you're frustrated that he's keeping you locked up like this, but don't give him too bad a time when he gets back. He loves you more than you know. It terrifies him to be away from you. She got up silently and ghosted to the door. Good night, Bella, she whispered as she shut it behind herself. Good night, Rosalie, I murmured a second too late. It took me a long time to fall asleep after that. When I did sleep, I had a nightmare. I was crawling across the dark, cold stones of an unfamiliar street, under lightly falling snow, leaving a trail of blood smeared behind me. A shadowy angel in a long white dress watched my progress with resentful eyes. The next morning, Alice drove me to school while I stared grumpily out the windshield. I was feeling sleep-deprived, and it made the irritation of my imprisonment that much stronger. Tonight we'll go out to Olympia or something, she promised. That would be fun, right? Why don't you just lock me in the basement, I suggested, and forget the sugar coating? Alice frowned. He's going to take the Porsche back. I'm not doing a very good job. You're supposed to be having fun. It's not your fault, I muttered. I couldn't believe I actually felt guilty. I'll see you at lunch. I trudged off to English. Without Edward, the day was guaranteed to be unbearable. I sulked through my first class, well aware that my attitude wasn't helping anything. When the bell rang, I got up without much enthusiasm. Mike was there at the door holding it open for me. Edward hiking this weekend? He asked sociably as we walked out into the light rain. Yeah. You want to do something tonight? How could he still sound hopeful? Can't. I've got a slumber party, I grumbled. He gave me a strange look as he processed my mood. Who are you? Mike's question was cut short as a loud, growling roar erupted from behind us in the parking lot. Everyone on the sidewalk turned to look, staring in disbelief as the noisy black motorcycle screeched to a stop on the edge of the concrete, the engine still snarling. Jacob waved to me urgently. Run, Bella! He yelled over the engine's roar. I was frozen for a second before I understood. I looked at Mike quickly. I knew I only had seconds. How far would Alice go to restrain me in public? I got really sick and went home, okay? I said to Mike, my voice filled with sudden excitement. Fine, he muttered. I pecked Mike swiftly on the cheek. Thanks, Mike. I owe you one, I called as I sprinted away. Jacob revved his engine, grinning. I jumped on the back of his seat, wrapping my arms tightly around his waist. I caught sight of Alice frozen at the edge of the cafeteria, her eyes sparking with fury, her lip curled back over her teeth. I shot her one pleading glance. Then we were racing across the blacktop so fast that my stomach got lost somewhere behind me. Hold on! Jacob shouted. I hid my face in his back as he sped down the highway. I knew he would slow down when we hit the Quileute border. I just had to hold on till then. I prayed silently and fervently that Alice wouldn't follow, and that Charlie wouldn't happen to see me. It was obvious when we had reached the safe zone. The bike slowed, and Jacob straightened up and howled with laughter. I opened my eyes. We made it! He shouted. Not bad for a prison break, eh? Good thinking, Jake. I remember what you said about the psychic leech not being able to predict what I'm going to do. I'm glad you didn't think of this. She wouldn't have let you go to school. That's why I didn't consider it. He laughed triumphantly. What do you want to do today? Anything, I laughed back. It felt great to be free. Chapter 8. Temper. We ended up on the beach again, wandering aimlessly. Jacob was still full of himself for engineering my escape. Do you think they'll come looking for you? He asked, sounding hopeful. No, I was certain about that. They're going to be furious with me tonight, though. He picked up a rock and chucked it into the waves. "Don't go back, then," he suggested again. "Charlie would love that," I said sarcastically. "I bet he wouldn't mind." I didn't answer. Jacob was probably right, and that made me grind my teeth together. Charlie's blatant preference for my Quileute friends was so unfair. I wondered if he would feel the same if he knew the choice was really between vampires and werewolves. "So what's the latest pack scandal?" I asked lightly. Jacob skidded to a halt, and he stared down at me with shocked eyes. "What? That was a joke." "Oh." He looked away. I waited for him to start walking again, but he seemed lost in thought. "Is there a scandal?" I wondered. Jacob chuckled once. "I forget what it's like, not having everyone know everything all the time. Having a quiet, private place inside my head." We walked along the stony beach quietly for a few minutes. "So what is it?" I finally asked. "That everyone in your head already knows." He hesitated for a moment, as if he weren't sure how much he was going to tell me. Then he sighed and said, "Quill imprinted. That's three now. The rest of us are starting to get worried. Maybe it's more common than the stories say." He frowned, and then turned to stare at me. He gazed into my eyes without speaking, his eyebrows furrowed in concentration. "What are you staring at?" I asked, feeling self-conscious. He sighed. "Nothing." Jacob started walking again. Without seeming to think about it, he reached out and took my hand. We paced silently across the rocks. I thought of how we must look walking hand in hand down the beach, like a couple, certainly, and wondered if I should object. But this was the way it had always been with Jacob. No reason to get worked up about it now. "Why is Quill's imprinting such a scandal?" I asked, when it didn't look like he was going to go on. "Is it because he's the newest one?" "That doesn't have anything to do with it." "Then what's the problem?" "It's another one of those legend things. I wonder when we're going to stop being surprised that they're all true," he muttered to himself. "Are you going to tell me, or do I have to guess?" "You'd never get it right. See, Quill hasn't been hanging out with us, you know, until just recently. So he hadn't been around Emily's place much." "Quill imprinted on Emily, too?" I gasped. "No, I told you not to guess. Emily had her two nieces down for a visit, and Quill met Claire." He didn't continue. I thought about that for a moment. "Emily doesn't want her niece with a werewolf? That's a little hypocritical," I said. But I could understand why she of all people might feel that way. I thought again of the long scars that marred her face and extended all the way down her right arm. Sam had lost control just once when he was standing too close to her. Once was all it took. I'd seen the pain in Sam's eyes when he looked at what he'd done to Emily. I could understand why Emily might want to protect her niece from that. "Would you please stop guessing? You're way off." "Emily doesn't mind that part. It's just, well, a little early." "What do you mean early?" Jacob appraised me with narrowed eyes. "Try not to be judgmental, okay?" I nodded cautiously. "Claire is two," Jacob told me. Rain started to fall. I blinked furiously as the drops pelted my face. Jacob waited in silence. He wore no jacket, as usual. The rain left a spatter of dark spots on his black t-shirt and dripped through his shaggy hair. His face was expressionless as he watched mine. "Quill imprinted with a two-year-old?" I was finally able to ask. "It happens," Jacob shrugged. He bent to grab another rock and sent it flying out into the bay. "Or so the stories say." "But she's a baby," I protested. He looked at me with dark amusement. "Quill's not getting any older," he reminded me, a bit of acid in his tone. "He'll just have to be patient for a few decades." I don't know what to say. I was trying my hardest not to be critical, but in truth, I was horrified. Until now, nothing about the werewolves had bothered me since the day I'd found out they weren't committing the murders I'd suspected them of. "You're making judgments," he accused. "I can see it on your face." "Sorry," I muttered, "but it sounds really creepy." "It's not like that. You've got it all wrong," Jacob defended his friend, suddenly vehement. "I've seen what it's like through his eyes. There's nothing romantic about it at all. Not for Quill. Not now." He took a deep breath, frustrated. "It's so hard to describe. It's not like love at first sight, really. It's more like gravity moves. When you see her, suddenly it's not the earth holding you here anymore. She does. And nothing matters more than her. And you would do anything for her. Be anything for her. You become whatever she needs you to be. Whether that's a protector, or a lover, or a friend, or a brother. Quill will be the best, kindest big brother any kid ever had. There isn't a toddler on the planet that will be more carefully looked after than that little girl will be. And then, when she's older and needs a friend, he'll be more understanding, trustworthy, and reliable than anyone else she knows. And then, when she's grown up, they'll be as happy as Emily and Sam." A strange, bitter edge sharpened his tone at the very end, when he spoke of Sam. "Doesn't Claire get a choice here?" "Of course. But why wouldn't she choose him in the end? He'll be her perfect match, like he was designed for her alone." We walked in silence for a moment, till I paused to toss a rock toward the ocean. It fell to the beach several meters short. Jacob laughed at me. "We can't all be freakishly strong," I muttered. He sighed. "When do you think it will happen for you?" I asked quietly. His answer was flat and immediate. "Never." "It's not something you can control, is it?" He was silent for a few minutes. Unconsciously, we both walked slower, barely moving at all. "It's not supposed to be," he admitted. "But you have to see her. The one that's supposedly meant for you. And you think that if you haven't seen her yet, then she's not out there?" I asked skeptically. "Jacob, you haven't really seen much of the world. Less than me, even." "No, I haven't," he said in a low voice. He looked at my face with suddenly piercing eyes. "But I'll never see anyone else, Bella. I only see you. Even when I close my eyes and try to see something else. Ask Quill or Embry. It drives them all crazy." I dropped my eyes to the rocks. We weren't walking anymore. The only sound was of the waves beating against the shore. I couldn't hear the rain over their roar. "Maybe I'd better go home," I whispered. "No," he protested, surprised by this conclusion. I looked up at him again, and his eyes were anxious now. "You have the whole day off, right? The bloodsucker won't be home yet." I glared at him. "No offense intended," he said quickly. "Yes, I have the whole day, but Jake..." He held up his hands. "Sorry," he apologized. "I won't be like that anymore. I'll just be Jacob." I sighed. "But if that's what you're thinking..." "Don't worry about me," he insisted, smiling with deliberate cheer, too brightly. "I know what I'm doing. Just tell me if I'm upsetting you." "I don't know. Come on, Bella. Let's go back to the house and get our bikes. You've got to ride a motorcycle regularly to keep it in tune." "I really don't think I'm allowed." "By who? Charlie or the blood? Or him?" "Both." Jacob grinned my grin, and he was suddenly the Jacob I missed the most. Sunny and warm. I couldn't help grinning back. The rain softened, turned to mist. "I won't tell anyone," he promised. "Except every one of your friends." He shook his head soberly and raised his right hand. "I promise not to think about it." I laughed. "If I get hurt, it was because I tripped. Whatever you say." We rode our motorcycles on the back roads around the push until the rain made them too muddy, and Jacob insisted that he was going to pass out if he didn't eat soon. Billy greeted me easily when we got to the house, as if my sudden reappearance meant nothing more complicated than that I'd wanted to spend the day with my friend. After we ate the sandwiches Jacob made, we went out to the garage and I helped him clean up the bikes. I hadn't been here in months, since Edward had returned, but there was no sense of import to it. It was just another afternoon in the garage. "This is nice," I commented when he pulled the warm sodas from the grocery bag. "I've missed this place." He smiled, looking around at the plastic sheds bolted together over our heads. "Yeah, I can understand that. All the splendor of the Taj Mahal without the inconvenience and expense of traveling to India." "To Washington's little Taj Mahal," I toasted, holding up my can. He touched his can to mine. "Do you remember last Valentine's Day? I think that was the last time you were here. The last time when things were still normal, I mean." I laughed. "Of course I remember. I traded a lifetime of servitude for a box of conversation hearts. That's not something I'm likely to forget." He laughed with me. "That's right. Servitude. I'll have to think of something good." Then he sighed. "It feels like it was years ago. Another era. A happier one." I couldn't agree with him. This was my happy era now. But I was surprised to realize how many things I missed from my own personal dark ages. I stared through the opening at the murky forest. The rain had picked up again, but it was warm in the little garage, sitting next to Jacob. He was as good as a furnace. His fingers brushed my hand. "Things have really changed." "Yeah," I said, and then I reached out and patted the back tire of my bike. "Charlie used to like me. I hope Billy doesn't say anything about today." I bit my lip. "He won't. He doesn't get worked up about things the way Charlie does. Hey, I never did apologize officially for that stupid move with the bike. I'm really sorry about ratting you out to Charlie. I wish I hadn't." I rolled my eyes. "Me too. I'm really, really sorry." He looked at me hopefully, his wet, tangled black hair sticking up in every direction around his pleading face. "Oh, fine. You're forgiven. Thanks, Bells." We grinned at each other for a second, and then his face clouded over. "You know, that day when I brought the bike over, I've been wanting to ask you something," he said slowly, "but also not wanting to." I held very still, a reaction to stress. It was a habit I'd picked up from Edward. "Were you just being stubborn because you were mad at me? Or were you really serious?" he whispered. "About what?" I whispered back, though I was sure I knew what he meant. He glared at me. "You know, when you said it was none of my business, if he bit you?" He cringed visibly at the end. "Jake," my throat felt swollen. I couldn't finish. He closed his eyes and took a deep breath. "Were you serious?" He was trembling just slightly. His eyes stayed closed. "Yes," I whispered. Jacob inhaled, slow and deep. "I guess I knew that." I stared at his face, waiting for his eyes to open. "You know what this will mean," he demanded suddenly. "You do understand that, don't you? What will happen if they break the treaty?" "We'll leave first," I said in a small voice. His eyes flashed open, their black depths full of anger and pain. "There wasn't a geographic limit to the treaty, Bella. Our great-grandfathers only agreed to keep the peace because the Cullens swore that they were different, that humans weren't in danger from them. They promised they would never kill or change anyone ever again. If they go back on their word, the treaty is meaningless, and they are no different than any other vampires. Once that's established, when we find them again..." "But Jake, didn't you break the treaty already?" I asked, grasping at straws. "Wasn't part of it that you not tell people about the vampires? And you told me, so isn't the treaty sort of moot anyhow?" Jacob didn't like the reminder. The pain in his eyes hardened into animosity. Yeah, I broke the treaty, back before I believed any of it, and I'm sure they were informed of that. He glared sourly at my forehead, not meeting my shamed gaze. But it's not like that gives them a freebie or anything. There's no fault for a fault. They have only one option if they object to what I did. The same option we'll have when they break the treaty. To attack. To start the war. He made it sound so inevitable. I shuddered. Jake, it doesn't have to be that way. His teeth ground together. It is that way. The silence after his declaration felt very loud. Will you never forgive me, Jacob? I whispered. As soon as I said the words, I wished I hadn't. I didn't want to hear his answer. You won't be Bella anymore, he told me. My friend won't exist. There'll be no one to forgive. That sounds like a no, I whispered. We faced each other for an endless moment. Is this goodbye then, Jake? He blinked rapidly, his fierce expression melting in surprise. Why? We still have a few years. Can't we be friends until we're out of time? Years? No, Jake. Not years. I shook my head and laughed once without humor. Weeks is more accurate. I was not expecting his reaction. He was suddenly on his feet, and there was a loud pop as the soda can exploded in his hand. Soda flew everywhere, soaking me like it was spraying from a hose. Jake! I started to complain, but I fell silent when I realized that his whole body was quivering with anger. He glared at me wildly, a growling sound building in his chest. I froze in place, too shocked to remember how to move. The shaking rolled through him, getting faster, until it looked like he was vibrating, his shape blurred. And then Jacob gritted his teeth together, and the growling stopped. He squeezed his eyes tight in concentration. The quivering slowed until only his hands were shaking. Weeks, Jacob said in a flat monotone. I couldn't respond. I was still frozen. He opened his eyes. They were beyond fury now. He's going to change you into a filthy bloodsucker in just a few weeks, Jacob hissed through his teeth. Too stunned to take offense at his words, I just nodded mutely. His face turned green under the russet skin. Of course, Jake, I whispered after a long minute of silence. He's 17, Jacob, and I get closer to 19 every day. Besides, what's the point in waiting? He is all I want. What else can I do? I'd meant that as a rhetorical question. His words cracked like snaps of a whip. Anything! Anything else! You'd be better off dead! I'd rather you were. I recoiled like he'd slapped me. It hurt worse than if he had. And then, as the pain shot through me, my own temper burst into flame. Maybe you'll get lucky, I said bleakly, lurching to my feet. Maybe I'll get hit by a truck on my way back. I grabbed my motorcycle and pushed it out into the rain. He didn't move as I passed him. As soon as I was on the small, muddy path, I climbed on and kicked the bike to life. The rear tire spit a fountain of mud toward the garage, and I hoped that it hit him. I got absolutely soaked as I sped across the slick highway toward the Cullens' house. The wind felt like it was freezing the rain against my skin, and my teeth were chattering before I was halfway there. Motorcycles were too impractical for Washington. I would sell the stupid thing first chance I got. I walked the bike into the Cullens' cavernous garage and was unsurprised to find Alice waiting for me, perched lightly on the hood of her Porsche. Alice stroked the glossy yellow paint. I haven't even had a chance to drive it, she sighed. Sorry, I spit through my rattling teeth. You look like you could use a hot shower, she said offhand, as she sprang lightly to her feet. Yep. She pursed her lips, taking in my expression carefully. Do you want to talk about it? Nope. She nodded in assent, but her eyes were raging with curiosity. Do you want to go to Olympia tonight? Not really. Can't I go home? She grimaced. Never mind, Alice, I said. I'll stay if it makes things easier for you. Thanks, she sighed in relief. I went to bed early that night, curling up on his sofa again. It was still dark when I woke. I was groggy, but I knew it wasn't near morning yet. My eyes closed, and I stretched, rolling over. It took me a second before I realized that the movement should have dumped me onto the floor, and that I was much too comfortable. I rolled back over, trying to see. It was darker than last night. The clouds were too thick for the moon to shine through. Sorry, he murmured so softly, but his voice was part of the darkness. I didn't mean to wake you. I tensed, waiting for the fury, both his and mine, but it was only quiet and calm in the darkness of his room. I could almost taste the sweetness of reunion in the air, a separate fragrance from the perfume of his breath. The emptiness when we were apart left its own bitter aftertaste, something I didn't consciously notice until it was removed. There was no friction in the space between us. The stillness was peaceful, not like the calm before the tempest, but like a clear night untouched by even the dream of a storm. And I didn't care that I was supposed to be angry with him. I didn't care that I was supposed to be angry with everyone. I reached out for him, found his hands in the darkness, and pulled myself closer to him. His arms encircled me, cradling me to his chest. My lips searched, hunting along his throat, to his chin, till I finally found his lips. Edward kissed me softly for a moment, and then he chuckled. I was all braced for the wrath that was going to put grizzlies to shame, and this is what I get? I should infuriate you more often. Give me a minute to work up to it, I teased, kissing him again. I'll wait as long as you want, he whispered against my lips. His fingers knotted in my hair. My breath was becoming uneven. Maybe in the morning. Whatever you prefer. Welcome home, I said, while his cold lips pressed under my jaw. I'm glad you came back. That's a very good thing. I agreed, tightening my arms around his neck. His hand curved around my elbow, moving slowly down my arm, across my ribs and over my waist, tracing along my hip and down my leg, around my knee. He paused there, his hand curling around my calf. He pulled my leg up suddenly, hitching it around his hip. I stopped breathing. This wasn't the kind of thing he usually allowed. Despite his cold hands, I felt suddenly warm. His lips moved in the hollow at the base of my throat. Not to bring on the ire prematurely, he whispered, but do you mind telling me what it is about this bed that you object to? Before I could answer, before I could even concentrate enough to make sense of his words, he rolled to the side, pulling me on top of him. He held my face in his hands, angling it up so that his mouth could reach my throat. My breathing was too loud. It was almost embarrassing, but I couldn't care quite enough to be ashamed. The bed? He asked again. I think it's nice. It's unnecessary, I managed to gasp. He pulled my face back to his, and my lips shaped themselves around his. Slowly this time, he rolled till he hovered over me. He held himself carefully, so that I felt none of his weight, but I could feel the cool marble of his body press against mine. My heart was hammering so loudly that it was hard to hear his quiet laughter. That's debatable, he disagreed. This would be difficult on a couch. Cold as ice, his tongue lightly traced the shape of my lips. My head was spinning. The air was coming too fast and shallow. Did you change your mind? I asked breathlessly. Maybe he'd rethought all his careful rules. Maybe there was more significance to this bed than I'd originally guessed. My heart pounded almost painfully as I waited for his answer. Edward sighed, rolling back so that we were on our sides again. Don't be ridiculous, Bella, he said, disapproval strong in his voice. Clearly he understood what I meant. I was just trying to illustrate the benefits of the bed you don't seem to like. Don't get carried away. too late, I muttered. And I like the bed, I added. Good. I could hear the smile in his voice as he kissed my forehead. I do too. But I still think it's unnecessary, I continued. If we're not going to get carried away, what's the point? He sighed again. For the 100th time, Bella, it's too dangerous. I like danger, I insisted. I know. There was a sour edge to his voice, and I realized that he would have seen the motorcycle in the garage. I'll tell you what's dangerous, I said quickly, before he could move to a new topic of discussion. I'm going to spontaneously combust one of these days, and you'll have no one but yourself to blame. He started to push me away. What are you doing? I objected, clinging to him. Protecting you from combustion. If this is too much for you, I can handle it, I insisted. He let me worm myself back into the circle of his arms. I'm sorry I gave you the wrong impression, he said. I didn't mean to make you unhappy. That wasn't nice. Actually, it was very, very nice. He took a deep breath. Aren't you tired? I should let you sleep. No, I'm not. I don't mind if you want to give me the wrong impression again. That's probably a bad idea. You're not the only one who gets carried away. Yes, I am, I grumbled. He chuckled. You have no idea, Bella. It doesn't help that you are so eager to undermine my self-control, either. I'm not going to apologize for that. Can I apologize? For what? You were angry with me, remember? Oh, that. I'm sorry. I was wrong. It's much easier to have the proper perspective when I have you safely here. His arms tightened around me. I go a little berserk when I try to leave you. I don't think I'll go so far again. It's not worth it. I smiled. Didn't you find any mountain lions? Yes, I did, actually. Still not worth the anxiety. I'm sorry I had Alice hold you hostage, though. That was a bad idea. Yes, I agreed. I won't do it again. Okay, I said easily. He was already forgiven. But slumber parties do have their advantages. I curled myself closer to him, pressing my lips into the indentation over his collarbone. You can hold me hostage anytime you want. He sighed. I may take you up on that. So is it my turn now? Your turn? His voice was confused. To apologize. What do you have to apologize for? Aren't you mad at me? I asked blankly. No. It sounded like he really meant it. I felt my eyebrows pull together. Didn't you see Alice when you got home? Yes. Why? Are you going to take her Porsche back? Of course not. It was a gift. I wished I could see his expression. His voice sounded as if I'd insulted him. Don't you want to know what I did? I asked, starting to be puzzled by his apparent lack of concern. I felt him shrug. I'm always interested in everything you do, but you don't have to tell me unless you want to. But I went to La Push. I know. And I ditched school. So did I. I stared toward the sound of his voice, tracing his features with my fingers, trying to understand his mood. Where did all this tolerance come from? I demanded. He sighed. I decided that you were right. My problem before was more about my prejudice against werewolves than anything else. I'm going to try to be more reasonable and trust your judgment. If you say it's safe, then I'll believe you. Wow! And most importantly, I'm not willing to let this drive a wedge between us. I rested my head against his chest and closed my eyes, totally content. So, he murmured in a casual tone, did you make plans to go back to La Push again soon? I didn't answer. His question brought back the memory of Jacob's words, and my throat was suddenly tight. He misread my silence and the tension in my body. Just so that I can make my own plans, he explained quickly. I don't want you to feel like you have to hurry back because I'm sitting around waiting for you. No, I said in a voice that sounded strange to me. I don't have plans to go back. Oh, you don't have to do that for me. I don't think I'm welcome anymore, I whispered. Did you run over someone's cat? He asked lightly. I knew he didn't want to force the story out of me, but I could hear the curiosity burning behind his words. No. I took a deep breath, and then mumbled quickly through the explanation. I thought Jacob would have realized. I didn't think it would surprise him. Edward waited while I hesitated. He wasn't expecting that it was so soon. Ah, Edward said quietly. He said he'd rather see me dead. My voice broke on the last word. Edward was too still for a moment, controlling whatever reaction he didn't want me to see. Then he crushed me gently to his chest. I'm so sorry. I thought you'd be glad, I whispered. Glad over something that's hurt you? He murmured into my hair. I don't think so, Bella. I sighed and relaxed, fitting myself to the stone shape of him. But he was motionless again, tense. What's wrong? I asked. It's nothing. You can tell me. He paused for a minute. It might make you angry. I still want to know. He sighed. I could quite literally kill him for saying that to you. I want to. I laughed half-heartedly. I guess it's a good thing you've got so much self-control. I could slip. His tone was thoughtful. If you're going to have a lapse in control, I can think of a better place for it. I reached for his face, trying to pull myself up to kiss him. His arms held me tighter, restraining. He sighed. Must I always be the responsible one? I grinned in the darkness. No, let me be in charge of responsibility for a few minutes. Or hours. Good night, Bella. Wait, there was something else I wanted to ask you about. What's that? I was talking to Rosalie last night. His body tensed again. Yes. She was thinking about that when I got in. She gave you quite a lot to consider, didn't she? His voice was anxious, and I realized that he thought I wanted to talk about the reasons Rosalie'd given me for staying human, but I was interested in something much more pressing. She told me a little bit about the time your family lived in Denali. There was a short pause. This beginning took him by surprise. Yes? She mentioned something about a bunch of female vampires, and you. He didn't answer, though I waited for a long moment. Don't worry, I said, after the silence had grown uncomfortable. She told me you didn't show any preference, but I was just wondering, you know, if any of them had shown a preference for you, I mean. Again he said nothing. Which one? I asked, trying to keep my voice casual and not quite managing. Or was there more than one? No answer. I wished I could see his face, so I could try to guess what this silence meant. Alice will tell me, I said. I'll go ask her right now. His arms tightened. I was unable to squirm even an inch away. It's late, he said. His voice had a little edge to it that was something new. Sort of nervous, maybe a little embarrassed. Besides, I think Alice stepped out. It's bad, I guessed. It's really bad, isn't it? I started to panic, my heart accelerating as I imagined the gorgeous immortal rival I'd never realized I had. Calm down, Bella, he said, kissing the tip of my nose. You're being absurd. Am I? Then why won't you tell me? Because there's nothing to tell. You're blowing this wildly out of proportion. Which one? I insisted. He sighed. Tanya expressed a little interest. I let her know, in a very courteous, gentlemanly fashion, that I did not return that interest. End of story. I kept my voice as even as possible. Tell me something. What does Tanya look like? Just like the rest of us. White skin, gold eyes, he answered too quickly. And of course, extraordinarily beautiful? I felt him shrug. I suppose, to human eyes, he said indifferent. You know what, though? What? My voice was petulant. He put his lips right to my ear. His cold breath tickled. I prefer brunettes. She's a blonde, that figures. Strawberry blonde, not at all my type. I thought about that for a while, trying to concentrate as his lips moved slowly along my cheek, down my throat, and back up again. He made the circuit 3 times before I spoke. I guess that's okay then, I decided. He whispered against my skin. You're quite adorable when you're jealous. It's surprisingly enjoyable. I scowled into the darkness. It's late, he said again, murmuring, almost crooning now, his voice smoother than silk. Sleep, my Bella. Dream happy dreams. You are the only one who has ever touched my heart. It will always be yours. Sleep, my only love. He started to hum my lullaby, and I knew it was only a matter of time till I succumbed. So I closed my eyes and snuggled closer into his chest. Chapter 9. Target. Alice dropped me off in the morning, in keeping with the slumber party charade. It wouldn't be long until Edward showed up, officially returning from his hiking trip. All the pretenses were starting to wear on me. I wouldn't miss this part of being human. Charlie peeked through the front window when he heard me slam the car door. He waved to Alice, and then he went to get the door for me. Did you have fun? Charlie asked. Sure, it was great. Very girly. I carried my stuff in, dumped it all at the foot of the stairs, and wandered into the kitchen to look for a snack. You've got a message, Charlie called after me. On the kitchen counter, the phone message pad was propped up conspicuously against a saucepan. Jacob called, Charlie had written. He said he didn't mean it, and that he's sorry. He wants you to call him. Be nice, and give him a break. He sounded upset. I grimaced. Charlie didn't usually editorialize on my messages. Jacob could just go ahead and be upset. I didn't want to talk to him. Last I'd heard, they weren't big on allowing phone calls from the other side. If Jacob preferred me dead, then maybe he should get used to the silence. My appetite evaporated. I turned an about face and went to put my things away. Aren't you going to call Jacob? Charlie asked. He was leaning around the living room wall, watching me pick up. No. I started up the stairs. That's not very attractive behavior, Bella, he said. Forgiveness is divine. Mind your own business, I muttered under my breath, much too low for him to hear. I knew the laundry was building up, so after I put my toothpaste away and threw my dirty clothes in the hamper, I went to strip Charlie's bed. I left his sheets in a pile at the top of the stairs and went to get mine. I paused beside the bed, cocking my head to the side. Where was my pillow? I turned in a circle, scanning the room. No pillow. I noticed that my room looked oddly tidy. Hadn't my gray sweatshirt been draped over the low bedpost on the footboard? And I would swear there had been a pair of dirty... I paused beside the bed, cocking my head to the side. Where was my pillow? I turned in a circle, scanning the room. No pillow. I noticed that my room looked oddly tidy. Hadn't my gray sweatshirt been draped over the low bedpost on the footboard? And I would swear there had been a pair of dirty socks behind the rocking chair, along with the red blouse I tried on 2 mornings ago, but decided was too dressy for school, hanging over the arm. I spun around again. My hamper wasn't empty, but it wasn't overflowing the way I thought it had been. Was Charlie doing laundry? That was out of character. Dad, did you start the wash? I shouted out my door. No, he shouted back, sounding guilty. Did you want me to? No, I got it. Were you looking for something in my room? No, why? I can't find a shirt. I haven't been in there. And then I remembered that Alice had been here to get my pajamas. I hadn't noticed that she'd borrowed my pillow, too, probably since I'd avoided the bed. It looked like she had cleaned while she was passing through. I blushed for my slovenly ways. But that red shirt really wasn't dirty, so I went to save it from the hamper. I expected to find it near the top, but it wasn't there. I dug through the whole pile and still couldn't find it. I knew I was probably getting paranoid, but it seemed like something else was missing. Or maybe more than one something. I didn't even have half a load here. I ripped my sheets off and headed for the laundry closet, grabbing Charlie's on the way. The washing machine was empty. I checked the dryer, too, half expecting to find a wash load waiting for me, courtesy of Alice. Nothing. I frowned, mystified.
"Did you find what you were looking for?" Charlie yelled.
"Not yet." I went back upstairs to search under my bed. Nothing but dust bunnies. I started to dig through my dresser. Maybe I'd put the red shirt away and forgotten. I gave up when the doorbell rang. That would be Edward.
"Door," Charlie informed me from the couch as I skipped past him. "Don't strain yourself, Dad."
I pulled the door open with a big smile on my face. Edward's golden eyes were wide. His nostrils flared. His lips pulled back over his teeth.
"Edward?"
My voice was sharp with shock as I read his expression.
"What?"
He put his finger to my lips.
"Give me 2 seconds," he whispered. "Don't move."
I stood frozen on the doorstep, and he disappeared. He moved so quickly that Charlie wouldn't even have seen him pass. Before I could compose myself enough to count to 2, he was back. He put his arm around my waist and pulled me swiftly toward the kitchen. His eyes darted around the room, and he held me against his body as if he were shielding me from something. I threw a glance toward Charlie on the couch, but he was studiously ignoring us.
"Someone's been here," he murmured in my ear after he pulled me to the back of the kitchen.
His voice was strained. It was difficult to hear him over the thumping of the washing machine.
"I swear that no werewolves," I started to say.
"Not one of them," he interrupted me quickly, shaking his head.
"One of us."
His tone made it clear that he didn't mean a member of his family. I felt the blood empty from my face.
"Victoria?"
I choked.
"It's not a scent I recognize. One of the Volturi?"
I guessed. "Probably."
"When?"
"That's why I think it must have been them. It wasn't long ago, early this morning while Charlie was sleeping. And whoever it was didn't touch him. So there must have been another purpose."
"Looking for me?"
He didn't answer. His body was frozen, a statue.
"What are you two hissing about in here?"
Charlie asked suspiciously, rounding the corner with an empty popcorn bowl in his hands. I felt green. A vampire had been in the house looking for me while Charlie slept. Panic overwhelmed me, closed my throat. I couldn't answer. I just stared at him in horror. Charlie's expression changed. Abruptly, he was grinning.
"If you two are having a fight, well, don't let me interrupt."
Still grinning, he put his bowl in the sink and sauntered out of the room.
"Let's go," Edward said in a low, hard voice.
"But Charlie!" The fear was squeezing my chest, making it hard to breathe. He deliberated for a short second, and then his phone was in his hand.
"Emmett," he muttered into the receiver.
He began talking so fast that I couldn't understand the words. It was over in a half a minute. He started pulling me toward the door.
"Emmett and Jasper are on their way," he whispered when he felt my resistance. "They'll sweep the woods. Charlie is fine."
I let him drag me along then, too panicked to think clearly. Charlie met my frightened eyes with a smug grin, which suddenly turned to confusion. Edward had me out the door before Charlie could say anything.
"Where are we going?"
I couldn't stop whispering, even after we were in the car.
"We're going to talk to Alice," he told me,
his volume normal, but his voice bleak.
"You think maybe she saw something?"
He stared at the road through narrowed eyes.
"Maybe."
They were waiting for us,
on alert after Edward's call. It was like walking into a museum. Everyone still as statues in various poses of stress. What happened? Edward demanded as soon as we were through the door. I was shocked to see that he was glowering at Alice, his hands fisted in anger. Alice stood with her arms folded tight across her chest. Only her lips moved. I have no idea. I didn't see anything. How is that possible? He hissed. Edward, I said, a quiet reproof. I didn't like him talking to Alice this way. Carlyle interrupted in a calming voice. It's not an exact science, Edward. He was in her room, Alice. He could have still been there, waiting for her. I would have seen that. Edward threw his hands up in exasperation. Really? You're sure? Alice's voice was cold when she answered. You already got me watching the Volturi's decisions, watching for Victoria's return, watching Bella's every step. You want to add another? Do I just have to watch Charlie, or Bella's room, or the house, or the whole street, too? Edward, if I try to do too much, things are going to start slipping through the cracks. It looks like they already are, Edward snapped. She was never in any danger. There was nothing to see. If you're watching Italy, why didn't you see them send...
I don't think it's them, Alice insisted. I would have seen that.
Who else would leave Charlie alive? I shuddered.
I don't know, Alice said.
Helpful.
Stop it, Edward, I whispered.
He turned on me, his face still livid, his teeth clenched together. He glared at me for half a second, and then suddenly he exhaled. His eyes widened and his jaw relaxed. You're right, Bella. I'm sorry. He looked at Alice. Forgive me, Alice. I shouldn't be taking this out on you. That was inexcusable.
I understand, Alice assured him. I'm not happy about it either.
Edward took a deep breath. Okay, let's look at this logically. What are the possibilities? Everyone seemed to thaw out at once. Alice relaxed and leaned against the back of the couch. Carlyle walked slowly toward her, his eyes far away. Esme sat on the sofa in front of Alice, curling her legs up on the seat. Only Rosalie remained unmoving, her back to us, staring out the glass wall. Edward pulled me to the sofa, and I sat next to Esme, who shifted to put her arm around me. He held one of my hands tightly in both of his. Victoria? Carlyle asked. Edward shook his head. No, I didn't know the scent. He might have been from the Volturi, someone I've never met. Alice shook her head.
Aro hasn't asked anyone to look for her yet. I will see that. I'm waiting for it.
Edward's head snapped up. You're watching for an official command. You think someone's acting on their own. Why? Caius's idea, Edward suggested, his face tightening again.
Or Jane's, Alice said. They both have the resources to send an unfamiliar face,
Edward scowled, and the motivation.
It doesn't make sense, though, Esme said. If whoever it was meant to wait for Bella, Alice would have seen that. He or she had no intention of hurting Bella, or Charlie for that matter.
I cringed at my father's name.
It's going to be fine, Bella, Esme murmured, smoothing my hair.
But what was the point then? Carlyle mused.
Checking to see if I'm still human, I guessed.
Possible, Carlyle said. Rosalie breathed out a sigh, loud enough for me to hear. She'd unfrozen, and her face was turned expectantly toward the kitchen. Edward, on the other hand, looked discouraged. Emmett burst through the kitchen door, Jasper right behind him. Long gone, hours ago, Emmett announced, disappointed. The trail went east, then south, and disappeared on a side road. Had a car waiting. That's bad luck, Edward muttered. If he'd gone west, well, it would be nice for those dogs to make themselves useful. I winced, and Esme rubbed my shoulder. Jasper looked at Carlyle,
Neither of us recognized him, but here. He held out something green and crumpled. Carlyle took it from him and held it to his face. I saw as it exchanged hands that it was a broken fern frond. Maybe you know the scent.
No, Carlyle said. Not familiar. No one I've ever met.
Perhaps we're looking at this the wrong way. Maybe it's a coincidence, Esme began, but stopped when she saw everyone else's incredulous expressions. I don't mean a coincidence that a stranger happened to pick Bella's house to visit at random. I meant that maybe someone was just curious. Our scent is all around her. Was he wondering what draws us there?
Why wouldn't he just come here, then, if he was curious? Emmett demanded.
You would, Esme said with a sudden fond smile. The rest of us aren't always so direct. Our family is very large. He or she might be frightened, but Charlie wasn't harmed. This doesn't have to be an enemy.
Just curious. Like James and Victoria had been curious in the beginning. The thought of Victoria made me tremble, though the one thing they seemed certain of was that it had not been her. Not this time. She would stick to her obsessed pattern. This was just someone else, a stranger.
I was slowly realizing that vampires were much bigger participants in this world than I'd once thought. How many times did the average human cross paths with them, completely unaware? How many deaths, obliviously reported as crimes and accidents, were really due to their thirst? How crowded would this new world be when I finally joined it? The shrouded future sent a shiver down my spine. The Cullens pondered Esme's words with varying expressions. I could see that Edward did not accept her theory, and that Carlyle very much wanted to. Alice pursed her lips.
I don't think so. The timing of it was too perfect. The visitor was so careful to make no contact. Almost like he or she knew that I would see.
He could have other reasons for not making contact, Esme reminded her.
Does it really matter who it was? I asked. Just the chance that someone was looking for me, isn't that reason enough? We shouldn't wait for graduation.
No, Bella, Edward said quickly. It's not that bad. If you're really in danger, we'll know.
Think of Charlie, Carlyle reminded me. Think of how it would hurt him if you disappeared.
I am thinking of Charlie. He's the one I'm worried about. What if my little guest had happened to be thirsty last night? As long as I'm around Charlie, he's a target too. If anything happened to him, it would be all my fault.
Hardly, Bella, Esme said, patting my hair again. And nothing will happen to Charlie. We're just going to have to be more careful.
More careful? I repeated in disbelief.
It's all going to be fine, Bella, Alice promised.
Edward squeezed my hand.
And I could see, looking at all of their beautiful faces one by one, that nothing I could say was going to change their minds. It was a quiet ride home. I was frustrated. Against my better judgment, I was still human.
You won't be alone for a second, Edward promised as he drove me to Charlie's. Someone will always be there. Emmett, Alice, Jasper. I sighed.
This is ridiculous. They'll get so bored. They'll have to kill me themselves just for something to do.
Edward gave me a sour look. Hilarious, Bella.
Charlie was in a good mood when we got back. He could see the tension between me and Edward, and he was misinterpreting it. He watched me throw together his dinner with a smug smile on his face. Edward had excused himself for a moment to do some surveillance, I assumed, but Charlie waited till he was back to pass on my messages.
Jacob called again, Charlie said, as soon as Edward was in the room.
I kept my face empty as I set the plate in front of him.
Is that a fact?
Charlie frowned.
Don't be petty, Bella. He sounded really low. Is Jacob paying you for all the PR, or are you a volunteer?
Charlie grumbled incoherently at me until the food cut off his garbled complaint. Though he didn't realize it, he'd found his mark. My life was feeling a lot like a game of dice right now.
Would the next role come up Snake Eyes? What if something did happen to me? It seemed worse than petty to leave Jacob feeling guilty about what he'd said. But I didn't want to talk to him with Charlie around, to have to watch my every word so I didn't let the wrong thing slip. Thinking about this made me jealous of Jacob and Billy's relationship. How easy it must be when you had no secrets from the person you lived with. So I would wait for the morning. I most likely wasn't going to die tonight, after all, and it wouldn't hurt him to feel guilty for 12 more hours. It might even be good for him. When Edward officially left for the evening, I wondered who was out in the downpour, keeping an eye on Charlie and me. I felt awful for Alice or whoever else it might be, but still comforted. I had to admit it was nice, knowing I wasn't alone. And Edward was back in record time. He sang me to sleep again, and aware, even in unconsciousness, that he was there, I slept free of nightmares. In the morning, Charlie left to go fishing with Deputy Mark before I was up. I decided to use this lack of supervision to be divine. I'm going to let Jacob off the hook, I warned Edward after I'd eaten breakfast. I knew you'd forgive him, he said with an easy smile. Holding grudges is not one of your many talents. I rolled my eyes, but I was pleased. It seemed like Edward really was over the whole anti-werewolf thing. I didn't look at the clock until after I dialed. It was a little early for calls, and I worried that I would wake Billy and Jake, but someone picked up before the second ring, so he couldn't have been too far from the phone. Hello? A dull voice said. Jacob? Bella! He exclaimed. Oh, Bella, I'm so sorry. He tripped over the words as he hurried to get them out. I swear I didn't mean it. I was just being stupid. I was angry. But that's no excuse. It was the stupidest thing I've ever said in my life, and I'm sorry. Don't be mad at me, please. Please. Lifetime of servitude up for grabs. All you have to do is forgive me. I'm not mad. You're forgiven. Thank you, he breathed fervently. I can't believe I was such a jerk. Don't worry about that. I'm used to it. He laughed, exuberant with relief. Come down to see me, he begged. I want to make it up to you. I frowned. How? Anything you want. Cliff diving? He suggested, laughing again. Oh, there's a brilliant idea. I'll keep you safe, he promised, no matter what you want to do. I glanced at Edward. His face was very calm, but I was sure this was not the time. Not right now. He's not thrilled with me, is he? Jacob's voice was ashamed, rather than bitter, for once. That's not the problem. There's this other problem that's slightly more worrisome than a bratty teenage werewolf. I tried to keep my tone joking, but I didn't fool him. What's wrong? He demanded. I wasn't sure what I should tell him. Edward held his hand out for the phone. I looked at his face carefully. He seemed calm enough. Bella? Jacob asked. Edward sighed, holding his hand closer. Do you mind speaking to Edward? I asked apprehensively. He wants to talk to you. There was a long pause. Okay, Jacob finally agreed. This should be interesting. I handed the phone to Edward. I hoped he could read the warning in my eyes. Hello, Jacob, Edward said, perfectly polite. There was a silence. I bit my lip, trying to guess how Jacob would answer. Someone was here. Not a scent I know, Edward explained. Has your pack come across anything new? Another pause, while Edward nodded to himself, unsurprised. Here's the crux, Jacob. I won't be letting Bella out of my sight till I get this taken care of. It's nothing personal. Jacob interrupted him then, and I could hear the buzz of his voice from the receiver. Whatever he was saying, he was more intense than before. I tried unsuccessfully to make out the words. You might be right, Edward began, but Jacob was arguing again. Neither of them sounded angry, at least. That's an interesting suggestion. We're quite willing to renegotiate. if Sam is amenable. Jacob's voice was quieter now. I started chewing on my thumbnail as I tried to read Edward's expression.
Thank you, Edward replied.
Then Jacob said something that caused a surprised expression to flicker across Edward's face.
I'd planned to go alone, actually, Edward said, answering the unexpected question,
and leave her with the others. Jacob's voice rose in pitch, and it sounded to me like he was trying to be persuasive.
I'll try to consider it objectively, Edward promised, as objectively as I'm capable of.
The pause was shorter this time.
That's not a half-bad idea.
When?
No, that's fine. I'd like a chance to follow the trail personally, anyway.
10 minutes?
Certainly, Edward said. He held the phone out to me.
Bella?
I took it slowly, feeling confused.
What was that all about? I asked Jacob. My voice peeved. I knew it was juvenile, but I felt excluded.
A truce, I think.
Hey, do me a favor, Jacob suggested.
Try to convince your bloodsucker that the safest place for you to be, especially when he leaves, is on the reservation. We're well able to handle anything.
Is that what you were trying to sell him?
Yes, it makes sense. Charlie's probably better off here, too. As much as possible.
Get Billy on it, I agreed. I hated that I was putting Charlie within the range of the crosshairs that always seemed to be centered on me.
What else?
Just rearranging some boundaries, so we can catch anyone who gets too near Forks. I'm not sure if Sam will go for it, but until he comes around, I'll keep an eye on things.
What do you mean by keep an eye on things?
I mean that if you see a wolf running around your house, don't shoot at it.
Of course not. You really shouldn't do anything risky, though,